Welcome to Everyday Entrepreneurs Everywhere with your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Everyday Entrepreneurs Everywhere podcast. This is Chris Parker, and this is part two of the house story. And Graham Massey is one of the co-founders of The House. And if everything goes well, this will be published just after the episode with his co-founder. So I'm really curious, and I love it when we do this, see multiple angles on the same business. So Graham, welcome to the conversation. And can you please share with us, what is it, Graham, that you do, and why do you do what you do?
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. I'm intrigued about the confluence of our two views. So that should be interesting to watch back. I have no idea what Steve said, but I what do we do, or what do I do? I think the easiest way to describe the house is we've built a business that's built on purpose. It's interesting. We came to purpose in a very convoluted route, really. I'd like to say we came to it before people started talking about purpose. I guess what really was the defining piece of work in that was when Sinek built his model, his why, how, what model, something we could do on one page that Steve and I had been doing perhaps on about five. But I think we were always interested in what business was in business to do other than make money. And I think that will probably be the same. I hope that's what the same thing Steve said too. I've got a background in operations. I was in the hospitality industry. That's where I began. I had a wonderful time, 20 years from hotel school through to operating in a PLC in the UK that operated a multiple range of leisure facilities, from seaside resort businesses to theatre restaurants to Tempin bowling centres, health clubs, nightclubs, coffee bars, cafe bars. We pretty much ran the gamut of... So I've come to my work from, I guess, a creating customer experience. And I think that hospitality gene, that service gene, that has really underpinned my side, if you will, of our development as a business over 25, we're in our 25th year as The House. And The House came into being because actually my ambition was to undertake a management buyout of part of the organization I worked for, raised the money, didn't get the business, but had a business called Leisure House, which Steve and I, we'd met about a year prior to that. And then we changed that, transformed that into what's become The House. And that's been a most wonderful 25 years of meanderings and growth, both personally, obviously, but as a business.
And what triggered the need to think that long ago, because right now purpose-driven strategy is in vogue everywhere. Before it became very popular, to focus on the meaning of business beyond simply profit. What triggered that?
Good question. And it's clear, it's important that I make it clear we didn't start there. I think we began by, like all organizations, I think, if they're candid, you start with an idea about running your own business, and you have that real desire to, if you like, to be an entrepreneur, but to create something for yourself. The catalyst for doing that for me was that I left two roles within two businesses and was agitated to leave this final business because I didn't like the culture of the organization. And I think that happens for a lot of people. I think there's an old expression in business, which is you don't leave your job, you leave your boss. That might be a little harsh because I have worked for some really good people, but certainly I didn't like the overall culture or the focus of the organization, which was always on money. It was always about bottom right hand corner. And my view was, I'm a long-term guy. I'm a long-term player in everything in my life. I've realized that looking back with people who've I read something the other day about the number of times when I was given appraisals or I was given sort of those interviews, and you record those things or people keep those documents. And I look back at that, and it seems to be the thing for me is I'm not interested in tomorrow. I'm interested in tomorrow. And I think also that hospitality tends to be an organization has a culture of, unless you can continue to improve the customer experiences, the customers don't come back. And you may have guessed looking at me, I'm not a youngster, so I've been around a long time. And so I was operating businesses before social media. And so you didn't know that your customers didn't like the experience because they didn't tell you, they just didn't come back. They voted with their feet. So I guess it was an awakening. If I don't want to rewrite history. There was a period of time where Steve and I set the business up and worked for some global brands. We worked in the industry we'd come from, which was leisure, hospitality, drinks brands. And we really set up initially as an agency, a broad agency, bringing brand, marketing, leadership, I guess a sort of a triumvirate of that, and merchandising. And then as we went through that, my job really was to run the business of the house. So I was a experienced business leader, I suppose, of organizations and the issues of personnel and the law and all of that. And Steve really sort of focused on getting us out there and bringing the creative flair to the organization. But of course, underpinning that was that my interest was always in leading people and creating a business of people who were, if you like, focused on what you were trying to do. And so for 10, 15, 12 years, we did that. And then as that happened and as the world was changing, and I was also, I think Steve and I are both getting to a stage of life where we thought there's more to it than running drinks brands or drink brand promotions or that sort of work. It became a growing feeling in us that actually want to do something else. And that reached a sort of head with one or two of the clients we were working with. We thought we really don't want to do this anymore. And of course, the world was changing. And Steve had been to a brilliant exhibition in New York, where we were looking at how you could reinvent, how you could use art and installations to create message around the areas at the beginning of sustainability, the early part of looking at the world through different eyes, the lack of equality and opportunity. And we were having those dialogues, and some of our clients we were working with had taken us into some of those dialogues too. So it became really something we began to feel, rather than we had this great, you know, moment of inspiration. It was an awakening. I was getting very interested in helping organizations with their leadership issues and their people issues rather than the brand issue. And because Steve and I came from different backgrounds, it became an interesting flavor. People didn't quite know how to categorize us, but said, we like working with you guys, so come and talk to us. So that would be the big answer, I suppose, to the question. I think the other thing that was happening for me was I was beginning to look at the, I guess that the underpinning of why I left organizations was I didn't like the cultures. And if I was to summarize my mission in life, it's been closing the gap between said and done. And I've always been after that. I was after that in childhood. If you say one thing and then you show up in a different way, I never quite understood why that would be. And that might have been rather idealized as I was growing up. But I recognized that as a leader, the core important aspects as I was leading people was they wanted me to show up the same every day, but come from not so much in terms of, you know, having good days, bad days, but in terms of my thrust, my intention was always going to be consistent. And I think if you show up authentically and say what you're trying to achieve and take your people there, no matter what the challenge is in that, then that consistency is really important in leadership. And I knew that. And I was working for organizations where that was clearly not happening, and they were working with a lot of very unhappy people. So in very simple, pragmatic terms, I got more and more interested in the role of values in leadership and how you could first define them, what that meant in terms of a culture you could build, how you might create that, and also how you would measure that. And that was the beginning of the big shift. And that was about 15 years ago.
Well, it also seems like a very brave thing to do, meaning you already had an presumably an ongoing business and book of work, and you're feeling that itch of you know, does this client or project suit me at a higher level than revenue? And I imagine a lot of people experience that regularly. However, they don't have either the insights to realize what they're feeling, or they don't have the courage to make the change. So what was the environment or space like around you that you felt contributed to your bravery to make that shift?
I think two things. I think one was that moment of realization that we were both deeply frustrated, unhappy. And I'd felt that twice before. I mean, the catalyst for seeking an MBO route from my last PLC role as a main board director was a Redmus moment. I'd met with the chairman to say to him, my level of frustration in wanting to bring projects to the board that were going to give us more of a long-term set of results rather than the short-term profit of tomorrow. And what actually tumbled out of my mouth was along the lines, well, if I had £10 million, I'd buy this business off you. And I had no intention of saying that. And irrespective of whether that was the right or wrong thing to say, what I realized in that moment, Chris, was that was my soul speaking. Soul just wanted to blurt this out without any mincing of words. And I realized then that if I felt that again, I should listen to it. And I think Steve and I won't speak for Steve. I've no idea what he said, but in a different way, we were coming to the same place. And actually, one of the real catalysts was one of our senior members of our agency team came to me one day, walked into my office and said something along the lines of, I've got a bit of a problem with this piece of work I want to do this. And I misunderstood what she was saying. I thought she meant, oh, I don't know how to do this piece of work. It was like, no, actually, I don't want to do this piece of work. Because she was deeply unhappy with the relationship that we developed with this particular client. It felt like to her, and actually to some degree me, that whatever we were doing didn't seem to be satisfying the client. And I think that was just all these sort of builds, Chris. I don't want to rewrite history, but it felt like at the time a lot of builds. And so this voice from within was saying, so why are we? And in fact, the decision we made was to say to that client, I think it's time you find a new agency. I don't think we're right for you anymore, which was the big move. And I can remember we sat in the kitchen of our offices around the table. And the decision was eventually that we gave up circa 70% of our revenue to stop working for that industry and those clients and allow it all to just drift away. We exited with grace. We tied all the loose ends up and we then moved into the new space. And literally within about a week of us making that decision, the phone rang. And we ended up working with Fiskars on a piece of work with them of repositioning their brand in the UK. And it was as if that just came. You know, we'd given it up. We were really looking at the chasm of a severe drop in income, reducing the size of our organization. And this piece of work, you know, the phone rang from a tiny piece of work we'd done a couple of years earlier. So it was, I'm not going to overplay it, but we did make the decision, that's it, we don't want to do this anymore. And that came from the soul, the heart, and said, let's move a new direction. And we did so gradually, winning new work, only responding to the work we wanted to do. And without saying you pulled a lever and it was a transformation overnight, it wasn't. It was over 3 to 5 years. But we got into the space, we said we only want to work with organizations that can genuinely demonstrate or are really keenly interested in answering that question about what do you want to achieve, what impact do you want to have in the world other than just making money.
Beautiful story. I'm watching and listening with intent and delight. And you've mentioned the term soul a number of times, which is a very spiritual term. So I'm going to grab onto that one and see what sort of rabbit hole we can uncover. Because one of the beliefs that I have and your story supports that belief, is that that when someone's being, you know, their outer self and their inner self become more aligned, that is the space or the moment where delight, happiness, flow, joy is possible. And myself, I've found myself in places in corporate environments oftentimes where I'm asked to behave or uphold values or behaviors which are distant from me. And someone's described it once as, then you're walking around with your head cranked. And you can do that for a while, but at a certain point, you're going to be driven insane and you're going to have to make a change. Yeah. And so, and one of the things that I believe deeply is if you can live or connect your outer self and your inner self and make choices based on that, then the opportunities in alignment with that self will, I'm not sure if they're attracted to you or you are open to them or whatever, but it seems to work out again and again. However, there's a sense of fear in that sometimes as well, because, hey, I've got a corporate job. And you know, do I hold the illusion of consistency of salary and walk around uncomfortable, or do I make that? So there's, that's all very fundamental and transformative. Basically, is that what you help people do with the house, is to go through that journey?
That's a great question. And so short answer is yes. And maybe what's going to help is explaining, you know, how and why and where we do that, with how we do that. But just to pick your story up, I like the way you described it. I think one of the fundamental challenges in inside organizations is the ability, and it's one of the big issues that we speak about, and I've done some work on recently with a client, where we've created organizations where it is impossible, if you will, to speak truth to power. It's one of the greatest challenges I think we're dealing with. And we've seen, I won't go into a political arena, but we see it played out again and again and again. And to answer your question about being out of alignment and how long do you live like that, there's a lot of work being done. And someone, one of my great teachers in this space is a man called Richard Barrett, who was the founder of the Barrett Values Center. And he's done a lot of work in this space, as have many others, in looking at the impact on our health of being out of alignment, of living in a way that is not true to our values. And the danger with values is we sort of have to really understand what that means by values. But that's this part that says, who am I? And to transform an organization, you have to firstly transform the leaders. And to transform the leaders, you have to transform the individuals. And one of Richard's favorite expressions really is around that. If the leaders can't transform the organization, or if they can't make that change, then change the leadership team. But the transformation's done.
I was going to ask, because like I don't know a lot of leaders who are really open or available to be transformed. No. It's not really top of mind for them.
No, and this is a big, this is the interesting shift that's going on in the world now. And of course, you know, when you start in this space, as Richard did, as many others have in his space, and ourselves in our arena, often we are the voice of, you know, this quiet voice that we're listening to. But I guess if we flip that back, what is going on inside us is this voice in our head saying, this isn't right. I'm not happy. I'm not doing the work I'm meant to be doing. I'm lacking purpose, motivation, drive. And it's how and when does this come to the surface to then expel this out by firstly saying it and then by acting on it. And that brings me back to the truth to power conversation. In the moment when I spoke to the chair, and in the moment when I was with him, a previous role, spoke to my immediate leader and told him I really didn't want to work for him anymore, I went home to my family, to my mortgage, to my house, to all the burdens and responsibility that I had, and said to my wife, I think I probably just resigned. And I knew that although I'd only said it at that moment, wouldn't take long before I was ousted in some way. And I think that's true of a lot of people's lives. So I don't want to say it's easy or it's a decision you can make lightly, but I think ultimately you get to that point where you say, I can't do this anymore. So what am I going to do about it? A lot of people then, you know, leave and set something up themselves and say, I'll do it my way. And of course, then they go through all that change pattern that goes with it. But I think so. It's about saying, what is it that really matters to me? What do I stand for? And then, you know, without saying any of us perfect or idealistic, then you start in that place. And I think the first piece of work is to work with leaders to say, so who are you? Who are you really? Because what if you want done, if you go to any survey in the world and say, okay, tell me the top 5-6 attributes of a leader, you'll see the same whether you ask that question in Europe or in the Americas or anywhere. And all the people I talk to around the world, the same top 10, let's go top 10, will come out again and again and again. It's authenticity. Sits almost as number one, mostly everywhere in the world. What does that mean? That means show me who you are. I'll follow you, even if I don't decide if you are doing something you truly believe in. I may disagree with you. I may differ in my view, but my values, if I see who you are and your values, I can work with that. I'll work with that because I see who you are. So that's the call. The call is to authenticity. And our work in ourselves and then with the work we do with others is to say, so how do we master those things in us that hold us back from being who we are, which is generally fear or ego or all those things or necessity or that pinch point between what I do to meet my needs against what I'm being asked to do. So it's always going to be a constant life of working with that, working with yourself, mastering your lack or your fear to overcome that. But that's how we become more and more authentic in the work we do or how we run our lives.
And authenticity, I love it. And authenticity and consistency you mentioned. And I think there's a dimension of adaptation or evolution here as well, because the I that I am being now is different than the I was a year ago. I think the basic core is probably the same, but the values, you know, when you become a parent, your values change. You know, there's these life moments as well. And I think when I'm doing, you know, digital transformation work, also start with purpose. So if you've had a chance to look at my simplicity scan, the top left is purpose. And one of the reasons that I do that is so much waste in transformation for some other reasons, you know, that are not aligned. They're not consistent. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes individual hobbyism with people that have mm-hmm. budgets, whatever. But when I, you know, start those conversations, I also ask, why does this need to happen? Meaning who's the benefactor truly?
Yeah.
And have you asked the benefactor, do they care? I mean, is this something that will actually create value, or is this something that we think might one day perhaps create value?
Yeah.
And I think that in a way that's kind of a truth to power statement as well, because oftentimes it's a position of power that someone's made an assumption of what's right, while other people in the organization might very well know maybe not right, judgment, maybe right and wrong isn't the right thing, but they might know of alternatives that are that are maybe more efficient or valuable. And the dimension of psychological safety is coming up here as well, meaning
Huge.
We have the comfort at any level in order to speak what is meaningful to me without the fear of unnecessary, you know, reprisal or
you're right at the heart of it. And again, I emphasize again my desire not to be idealistic. I'm an operator at heart. I came from operating and running organizations at the real sharp end of the hospitality business. There is no easy route, and so I'm always wishing to be really clear on, always want to be really clear on that. But this issue of psychological safety has become fundamental. Lots of work in this area, and I could pull out people who I think I admire. Patrick Lencioni, who's done work in this space for many years, and excellent books he's written on this. How do you have conflict safely? And he builds a very simple triangle of what needs to be in place. And of course, fundamentally to this is trust. And again, you know, when one brings in the work of others or the work I've studied myself around behavior, human behavior, right back in the days of Desmond Morris, when I was a student, you recognize that fundamentally, obviously we know we're hardwired. We look at everybody in that immediate reptilian brain saying, you know, friend or foe. And once we make that first decision in our minds, we then spend the rest of our times deciding whether that first decision was right. Mm. And mostly often it is. There's something in us innately that is constantly sensing this authenticity gap, if you will. So I think for leaders, I'm back to my point earlier, I guess, is which many corporate organizations are focused on one thing and have been for years, which is the bottom right hand corner. We live in the world of the marketplace of profit, of growth. And one of the things I found so difficult in my public or in my private limited company days, was that everything was about profit. And my chairman's first, often his first remark to me when he saw me, he'd ask me if I'd seen the share price today. And if that's your focus in the organization, then that's, guess what? Your culture is going to be all about numbers and money. And of course, organizations have to hit the numbers. And if they didn't, you know, no profit, no sustainability, no future. That's obvious. It's not denying that, but it's not the only measure. And I think it's evidence now that the better the culture and the more that culture is in the positive and the more you engage in the true sense of the word, the people in organization to the organizational purpose. The profit is the consequence that comes because you get all those other things by default. You get the commitment, you get the extra hours, you get the people showing up, you get the people bringing themselves fully to the work, and the profit comes from that. And to your point, if you can create that clear objective and your values, and you navigate by your values. If one of your values, I mean, again, forgive me, but you know, we went into organizations in the early days and asked people what their values were, and they'd have the same three, you know, professional, honesty, and integrity. Well, great, okay, fine. But if they're not a given in 2020 or 2018, or then frankly, what are we doing coming to work? If we've got to state those as our principal values, then we're missing the point. So for me, the values are about driving towards a supporting purpose, and they're a given.
Well, I remember because when Steve, your partner, was doing some consultancy around purpose and then translating that to storytelling and messaging for Power Peers, I remember he called that out because trust, I think, was one of our value statements, and he was like, "Isn't that just a ticket to the game? Why are you wasting letters on that?"
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I hadn't actually thought of that before, but that is pretty profound. But Grant, I want to go back a couple little segments and clarify something. Did you mean to say that you couldn't be an idealist and an operator? That there's a choice there, or how can you do both? Why is that an or question when my idealist self hopes it's an and? You can be an idealist and an operator in order to pursue that meaning, that impact.
Yeah.
And profit is a result. I hope that's so what did you mean by that?
That's a good pickup. So here's my the thing I have to work on in myself is this concern, which is something I've often, when you walk into organizations, that you present this idealistic approach, and the client, therefore whoever in whatever sector, looks at you and says, that's not attainable and achievable. So thanks for the ask, the clarification. The idealistic nature of me is saying, look, we can do this. The belief, the aspiration, the drive, the energy, the motivation is always in me. But there's a lovely piece. I think it's a lovely piece in a great film I enjoyed, Lincoln, which is a tremendous performance. And if you've seen the film, he sits in a darkened room talking about the North Star, which is his ambition, obviously, at the time of Lincoln's trying to unite the country around the abolition and the fight over slavery. And he said, you know, when people talked about the North Star, he said, no one ever spoke about the swamps, the ditches, you know, and so on, you'd have to navigate. And the fact that this North Star Road was going to meander, it was never a straight line. So I guess my point about the idea is it's not a straight line. And I know that. You've got a lot to navigate in between, and it's going to be the test of you to do it. So the idealism is, we're still going here. We're still going here. We can do this. We can do this. The idealism is not to say that's going to be easy or that this is going to be perfect. Working on ourselves is a piece of life's work, isn't it? And organizational culture is no different. But so if that answers the question, I hope that answers the question of what I mean by that. But I think you have to set a course whereby you can take your people with things and say, no, I can see how we can achieve that. And the authenticity is to call out the challenges, to call out where you're going to struggle. And you know, what better a year than just this year for leaders who are navigating organizations in times that none of us have ever experienced before. So I guess that's what I'm trying to emphasize. And that's probably just my own vulnerability around, you know, coming across as an idealist as opposed to a pragmatist. But the hope's there, the ambition has to be there. And for me, trust and profit are the outcome of this work. Trust is built over time. It is not, it might be offered for the first time I meet you. And do I trust you? Okay, let's go with yes, if I'm that type of person. And then, you know, you might go with the narrative and now prove me wrong, or no, I don't, now prove me right, whichever way you look at it. But trust has to be earned over time, because you joining up the gap between the said and the done. He said this, she said that, and that's what's happened. Okay. And you just keep reinforcing by the way you are with me that I can trust what you say, and like and vice versa. And therefore, I offer more of myself to you. So in a leadership team, the more the core leadership group might be, that they can build that psychological safety that comes when you show up and show me who you are, vulnerable or strong. One of the best examples we were working with a housing association here down in the southwest of England, and the CEO was relatively new to her role, and they asked us to run this workshop with the leadership team, and there was such tension in the room. And a challenge came up in the room, and the CEO, she just said, well, you know what, she said, and this was just the moment, she said, numbers really aren't my strong point, right? She said, I rely on others. And she pointed to her FD and said, I'm going to rely on you on the numbers, because numbers really aren't my strong point. And the conversation just sort of carried on. It didn't stop. And I'm at the front, Steve and I were both there, I think, actually, and we were sort of facilitating this workshop. And the conversation just sort of moved on as if nothing had happened. And I remember sort of stepping going, just time out. Let's just come back. Did anybody notice, you know, what happened in that moment? And there was no. I said, well, you just had your CEO telling you that numbers aren't her strong point. And I called that out as an excellent piece of leadership in that moment. Mm-hmm. Because what she was saying clearly was, and you know, you get why I'm making, illustrating the point. And I think the more leaders can say, look, I'm here because this is what I can do, and I've got the vision, or I've got this, or I bring this to the party, but I'm going to need my 6, 7, whatever the optimal number is for a core leadership team. And that's what I'm looking for. And that's what I think is being asked for now. Show up, bring what you bring your strengths, but together we will, you know, we will deliver the idealist or the ambition that we have for the organization. And that builds trust.
Beautiful. And I'm thinking on behalf of people who might be watching or listening now, and if they're leading an organization, and they're worried about the trust or lack of, or the profits or lack of, and they're triggered by this authenticity and consistency, and maybe they're feeling that itch themselves of, hey, have I been, you know, walking the walk here? Yeah. How can the house help them embark on that personal and organizational journey? And what would that look like if someone's listens to this and they call and they say, Graham, help. Yeah.
Okay. Great question. I think first number one, you know, have we really got anything to navigate the dialogue with. Is there anything inside the organization definition in its purpose, mission, vision, values? Is there anything in there by which the organization is being navigated? And one, to my great astonishment, we work for a wonderful organization that are a hospice. And if there's any organization that I would have imagined would have had a really clear purpose, it would have been a hospice. And we went in to work with the organization because, in their opinion, they didn't. And as we opened up that conversation, it was clear that they understood what they did, but they didn't really have hadn't really defined why it was they did it. And that seems so obvious from the outside, and yet it's very hard to articulate. But we did so with them, from which you then immediately set the tone for the conversations around. So this is our purpose, and these are our values by which we navigate everything we do to that purpose. Then we have a way of navigating our internal conversations, because if the values and the purpose are fit for that use, then it offers us all these tools, all these avenues of conversation. So if one of our values might, I mean, we tend to help organizations define values by, rather than single words, by a short sentence, two or three words. I can use one of ours, perhaps the house, to illustrate, but one of our values, which actually was the client, that hospice client, that gave it to us when we were looking at ourselves again, which we do periodically. We actually went to our clients and said, you tell us what you think, you know, you, by your feedback, we will determine whether we think our values are being lived. And the CEO rang me. He said, well, I'll tell you what I think one of your values is. You walk the hill with me. And that's become a house value. And I love that. He said, you walk the hill with me. So if we walk the hill with people, then you imagine if you turn that internally to the organization rather than just seeing values as an external, particularly more so in service organizations, where I think the two things are more closely able to be aligned, then how would I behave with you if we are struggling in our interactions or in the organizational performance if I walk the hill with you? It gives me all the juice to come and have a conversation with you.
Well, I can imagine what walk the hill with me means, but what does that mean to you? Like what behaviors does that
great question
well, inspire values, or yeah. or behaviors yeah. does that not include?
Taking how I see it and how it was expressed to us, I think fundamentally that we may have helped the, so this is one of four values, but we've helped the organization define where they are. And when we've done that, we walk with them to get them to that place. We walk with them to help them open those dialogues up. We stand with them alongside them rather than in some consultancy way of telling. We walk with people. We walk through those bridges, those ditches, over the barbed wire, around the corners, all the things that are difficult. We'll say, no, we'll come with you on this. We're not going to tell you what to do or, you know, go behind you. We're going to walk with you as you express how it feels to be going through this change that might be going on in the organization. Because as soon as one brings that recognition, the organization's here and wants to get there, and there's a gap. How do you navigate the gap? What do? We come and we show you the gap and walk away. Well, you know, classically, in the old days, shall we say, that might have been the way in which consultancies were judged. You come and you tell us the problem, you write a very expensive report and you go away. No. We'll help you define it, and then we'll help you navigate the gap between where you are and where you want to be. And if that takes a week or 10 weeks or 3 weeks, you can have us as long as you want, but we'll help you walk that hill, because it's hard. And there's a roller coaster of emotions that go with defining purpose, defining values, and changing culture, or shift. I prefer the word shifting culture than changing it, but that's maybe semantics, but it's about shifting the culture.
I love it. And in the spirit of time, we're going to start wrapping up. I have benefited from the expertise of the house, when I was on a management team of a energy and energy software company. So I can attest to the confrontation of that. I mean, confrontation, I mean, in a positive way, meaning a bit of speaking truth to power. And I would really invite people, if they're looking for, you know, that trust and profits, you know, through, you know, authentic meaning and working together with organizations, then please reach out to Graham Massey, and I'll put his LinkedIn in the show notes, and it's thehouse.co.uk. And again, this was part of a two-part series. And so I hope if you haven't, listened to or watched the episode related to Steve, his co-founder and partner, then I really suggest you listen to them both, because they're two sides of the same cloth. And it's really nice to see that. So I'm also looking forward to going back and listening to them again myself and reflecting and contrasting. So Graham, thank you so much for joining. I've really appreciated this, and your openness and your vulnerability was seen by me, and I'm sure will be felt by everyone. So thanks, Graham.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Learn more at ebillion.com/podcast.